RPG lessons learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. Find us online at rpgllpodcast.com. Email us at rpgllpodcast@gmail.com. And find us on Blue Sky at rpgll.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. I am your co-host, Tanner, and I'm here with your main host, Dusty. Dusty, what's good?
I think we're both co-hosts.
Yeah, you've got a revolving door of them. Is that rude to say?
Am I just too dumb to quit? I think it's because I'm too dumb to quit.
Yeah, you know what? We are playing a lot of games lately, and we have stuff to talk about, but this game is not about a game that I was in. This one is about one that you were in. Yeah, you are a two-timing bastard. I thought we had something exclusive, but you are playing your other game with Martin.
I am. Martin, the best GM ever. I'm kidding. I'm saying that just to annoy you. You're very different GMs. There's really no comparing you. I am amused thinking about, I don't know if you watch Seth Skorkowski on YouTube, but he has a whole story about this one player he had who talked about this other GM as being the best GM ever. Mm-hmm. And then he met that GM at that player's wedding. And that other GM was talking to Seth, like, this guy says you're the best GM ever.
Oh,
like, he was saying that to both GMs.
Yeah, that's excellent. But yeah, you're playing in Martin's game. You've been playing with Martin for a long time, haven't you? I remember when I was a mere listener of this show before I bribed my way on that you were playing with him pretty regularly back then too, right?
Years ago. I wish I had my notes in front of me from our campaign. I could tell you how many years ago, but I'm going to say like 2013 or 14.
That sounds congruent with what I remember you talking about. So,
yeah. So like 10 years?
I remember you were playing Castles and Crusades back then, and my memory of the couple episodes you had about Martin's game was that it was you and his brother, I believe, who were playing.
It is his brother Bernard, yes.
And you were each playing two characters, which was like mind-blowing to me at the time.
But completely possible. I looked, I'm sorry I lied to you. June 1st, 2015 was my first game with Martin.
Excellent.
And that doesn't matter the story at all. I'm like the old man who like goes after the asinine detail, but you got me curious. It's 9 years, not 10.
I was in the Beartooth Mountains of Wyoming at that time.
Oh, interesting.
In college. So tell me about your game, man. What system are you guys playing? Is this the same? Let me back up. Is this the same campaign that you've been running this whole time?
It's not. It's a new campaign. So you're right. We played. I'll give you some history of Martin's game. When I last talked about it in the podcast, it was this one campaign. And yeah, I had two characters. I had a dwarf fighter named Gurney, and I had a human cleric named Jean. And as you might be able to tell from the separate race and class, we were not playing any version of BX or OSE or anything where race and class are the same. We were playing Castles and Crusades. Castles and Crusades is still my favorite D20 game. I don't play it a lot.
Hold on. Let me pause there. Castles and Crusades is your favorite game with a D20 prominently.
Yeah. And I know I've also told you Basic Fantasy is. I think they're both my favorites.
Okay. I want to dig into that, but you keep going.
I think they're both my favorites. It's like having a favorite movie and my answer changes. My answer did change, Tanner, but I make no apologies for it. Castles and Crusades, I think, is my favorite D20 game. I really like it. I have described it before as an alternate universe 5th edition, but Martin got tired of it. So that first campaign went to Osric, which is a redux, a reorganization, a rewrite, but with all the same numbers and all the same mechanics as Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
And first edition, right?
First edition, yes. Yeah. So we finished our campaign in Osric. And Martin was like, let's start a new campaign. So the campaign that we're playing now, we've been playing in Old School Essentials, or BX D&D, the entire time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've described Martin before as being like a sociology major. And his GMing really reflects that, like you're interacting with societies and economies, and the world feels so real because he puts so much energy into the world, you know, versus the characters. The characters are well-rounded as well, but it's really all about the world and the power structures, and it's fascinating. We're playing essentially Palace of the Silver Princess, we played our first like two sessions were that adventure. And then I don't know how much you know, or if you know anything about Palace of Silver Princess, we just stayed in that world. He did not set Palace of Silver Princess in the BX setting of Mystara. It's in his own unique setting, and he's built the setting around Palace of Silver Princess. He did some genius stuff with Palace of Silver Princess where the adventure is written in the module is over. It's long over. And we're like 12 or 13 sessions in to going on adventures in and around Haven, the setting of the Palace of the Silver Princess.
That sounds incredible. That sounds like a dream game. I remember when you talking about when you were talking about your last game, the whole, you know, GM as a sociologist is was so interesting because you described that game as almost like Star Trek, where your characters would get on a boat, they'd land on an island, they'd figure out what the strange rules of this island were, solve a problem with them, and then move on. Is it episodic like that still in Martin's game number two, or is it more kind of continuous story-based? Like, I guess on the grand spectrum of what an RPG campaign can be. Like, what is it like?
To use a Star Trek reference, it's like being on the holodeck. Martin does a really powerful, strong job of simulating the world. Now, here's what that means, Tanner. We've had bad sessions. And, you know, I always say, like, good session to Martin, because it's always true. Like, we always have fun and we always do what we want. But sometimes we make poor choices.
Mm.
And if we make poor choices not to, like, engage in the world, and to no, we're going to leave here and go somewhere else. And then we'll spend like an entire session traveling from point A to point B, buying a couple of magic items and like really failing our charisma rolls to get in with the local nobles well enough to find an adventure. Like, we'll have a whole session that's kind of a bust where our players really didn't achieve very much. And then we'll have a session where we go into a dungeon and we achieve a whole lot and we get treasure. And then we'll have sessions where, because of the treasure, now the local political bodies are involved with us. We're putting money in the bank. People are asking us for money. We're investing in businesses. And like, we'll have a whole session around that. He really simulates the world and how good or bad or action-packed or political our games are 1,000% based on our choices.
That's excellent. I would love to get him on the show and talk to him and pick his brain about that kind of stuff. Because that seems like a level of, I don't want to say simulationism, because I feel like that can kind of be a dirty word in RPGs, but like depth and richness that many, many GMs, including myself, have never been able to pull off. But it sounds like that's his main bag, right?
He is no exaggeration. And I think I said this in the last show, the smartest human being I have ever like met. I'm going to say in person, but met period, like in person, Zoom, team, whatever. He is the smartest human being I've ever met.
And he just happens to also be a great dungeon master. That's incredible. Like, the fact is that the smartest person you know is also a dungeon master. Like, how often does that come up? Like, that's pretty lucky for you, huh?
I think it indicates that everyone listening is also super smart, because smart people play this hobby.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to check the math on that.
Blatantly pandering to our audience.
Tell me about, are you still playing with just, I'm sorry, what was his brother's name? Gerald?
Bernard, yeah. So it is still just Bernard and I. And regardless of system, we've kept really consistent on playing two characters. Sometimes Bernard will play three.
Okay.
And I think I mentioned in the last session that Martin breaks that cardinal rule of gaming. He always has GMPCs in the party.
Hmm.
But he never uses them. They're never the focus. In fact, the one GMPC-ish thing he'll do is sometimes like one of his PCs will throw themselves in front of whatever and sacrifice themselves so that we can get away.
So are they like more like hirelings almost?
They're very much like hirelings. Like, ask them questions before they'll help us in any of the political stuff. But in the dungeon, you know, he'll roll, I don't say a cleric, but we're playing BX. If we're heavy on like martial stuff, mm-hmm. then he'll be a magic user. If we have two magic users, then he'll be a fighter. And in fact, that's the case right now. Like, we don't have a fighter. So he has a fighter and a rogue to help round out the party, but they never take the initiative, you know, in the dungeon or during play. unless we ask them to or ask them to do something.
I used to be so bad about GM PCs, like really, really bad. And I like this was circa 2014, 2015 when I really started taking role-playing games seriously, when 5e was out and I was trying to run that. And I just had a terrible habit. My campaign structure at the time was that my players were captains of a pirate ship and they had all this crew who are basically hirelings. And I didn't treat them like hirelings. I treated them too much like my own characters. And that was such a downfall. But I was just thinking, like, if you saw this on a notice board and it was, say, take a number if you're interested in this, and it said a BX game about sociology and cultures run by the most intelligent human being you've ever met, but there's DMPCs and all this other stuff, like, would you take that number? Like, would, if this was advertised to you as opposed to you kind of discovering what the game was, would you go for it?
Probably not, but only because all these advice podcasts and YouTube videos and articles that I've read, you know, rail against the evils of GMPCs, but the way Martin does it is just absolutely seamless and has literally never, ever, not once been a problem.
That's an incredible feat. I'm incredibly jealous. So what was, you said you had some good sessions and bad sessions. What was the worst session of this like? And it sounds like the game is good, so I'm not trying to pick on Martin here without him here to defend himself, you know, but like just kind of speaking generally, like what was that like?
We miss opportunities all the time. Okay, so there's a couple ways to define worst sessions. So I'll give you maybe a couple. I feel like the stakes of the game, yes, your characters might die, but for me, the worst stakes are you might just miss stuff. You might just miss content. He might do all this prep and there might be this whole secret area of the dungeon. And if you never roll secret doors, he's not going to give it to you.
That's
you
brave.
You just never find it.
Yeah.
And he won't even tell you about it till like years later.
Brutal.
But yeah, it really is. We miss out on stuff. So we've had sessions where, you know, I know, like we're in this dungeon in this game with Palace of Silver Princess. One of our first adventures in Haven after we finished the actual module was to go to this abandoned fortress where these two heroes had set up their keep, their fortress, and we were going to go in and get treasure. And I know because of the way we were rolling to spot hidden doors, I know we missed all the treasure in that dungeon. I know we missed all the main treasure. The one item we got from that damn dungeon was cursed. So that you know, it's annoying, but it also makes the stakes feel real. So I love it. That's a bad session. Another bad session is if we're indecisive and we spend up traveling a lot. I'll tell you about two games in that vein real quick. In the old campaign, we encountered this town that was full of were-rats who would act like normal people, hope that you would dock there because they were a seaside town and one of the few ports where you could like get fresh food and water. And then they would kill you and take all your stuff. And once we realized that's what was happening, we just left. And Martin's like, you leave? And we're like, yeah, we get the hell out of there. And later, it was like, I had a whole thing ready for you to fight those rat people. But yeah, we would just nope out of stuff like bad players. But it's because we were really scared. We were terrified.
I don't think that's a bad player. I think that, and I don't think it's a bad GM either. I think it's just like you're in the moment. You're reacting in real life. Would you stick around in that town and try to solve its problem? No, yeah. Absolutely not. You would get out of there, right?
We would.
You feel like the weakest sessions are you cheating yourself out of fun.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So whether it's through dice rolls or decisions or.
You ever leave a conversation with someone and you're like, God, I screwed that up.
Yeah. That's how you feel.
That's what a bad game with Martin feels like is I never feel like it's Martin's fault. I feel like I made really terrible choices in the session.
Have you ever talked to him about that and see if he judges you about that or holds resentment about skipping your island of were-rats or whatever?
Not kind of maybe, yeah, but not really. He
seems like an even-tempered guy.
Very incredibly. Yeah. What he always says, and I think the reason I never asked him about it, he says he really has this drive to create stories, but he's terrible at dialogue, he's terrible at characterization. So instead of creating the story, he'll create the setting. Mm. And then he's really fascinated for us to create the story. So he always says that. So he plays for our choices. And I think he's sometimes fascinated, interested in our choices. So when we cheat ourselves out of choice, he's kind of like shrugging, like, oh, I mean, okay, whatever. Well, you do that. He's never saying that overtly, by the way, if you're listening, like, well, he's telegraphing that you should have done it, Dusty. No, he doesn't telegraph it. He's very neutral as we play, and he lets us do stuff. We always have wings after we play. It's as we're having wings that he'll be like, yeah, I was really surprised you guys jumped out of that. There was a lot there, but yeah, it's fine.
It sounds like this is a really special game, and I can tell from the way you're talking about it. Like, that's awesome. Like, yeah, to be that lucky with a GM with that style, that's incredible. Because I think that style of GMing has the potential to go so wrong. I've had a session with a good friend of mine who I think is a good GM, but he was trying something different. So if he ever listens to this, no hard feelings. But he fully prepared a world and a town and all these factions and stuff. And he was just like, go. And we didn't really like have any hooks. It took us forever to meet up with each other because we started all different places. And once we did get together, it was like, okay, like, I guess our session is about us running from the town guard because we pissed them off by doing something earlier. And like, that was it. I'm like that is the type of session that, like, that's the danger of what it sounds like Martin's game could be, but it sounds like it's really not, that he's giving you hooks. He's giving you stuff to engage with. Is that fair? Or
it is fair.
Yeah.
It feels like, it makes me sound silly, it feels like traveling to another world and inhabiting it and getting to have adventures there. Like, all those things that you think D&D is supposed to feel like, mm-hmm. because his games have this wonderful continuity that it is the same world, and the camera does linger after the Palace of the Silver Princess is over, and you're still in this world, and now what do you do? And now it's your choices, and now you're making your adventures. There's this threat you could deal with, or this threat you could deal with. There's this societal inequity that you could deal with, or there's this that you could deal with. Like, we can kind of just pick our own path, like life, but in this fantastical universe where we can also cast lightning bolt.
Yeah, sure.
It's amazing. And what he does that you and I don't do, I value what you and I do. We do one shots. If every game in my gaming life was a long running campaign where the camera lingers, there's a ton of continuity, I feel like I was missing out on all these games on the shelf behind me and all the games on the shelf behind you.
Sure.
So I love that we do one shots, wouldn't trade it. But having the experience of the classic D&D, when you read about it or think about it or see it in pop culture, the classic trope is this long continuity of this like crazy campaign in this alternate world where you have an alternate life. And that's Martin's game.
Do you know, does he prep everything like digitally, or does he have handwritten notes?
Handwritten notes.
I want to abduct this guy like an alien and study his brain.
I don't know if he'll ever agree to be on the show. He's very private. I'll tell you a story. I gave him for Christmas, not even for Christmas, I backed the Kickstarter for Castles and Crusades. And one of the cool extras was this journal, this cool leather bound, like turquoise colored journal that was stamped with the Castles and Crusades logo. And I was like, I'm not going to write in a journal. So I gave it to, I just took it to Martin's game and I gave it to him. That journal he has filled up, like it's 90% full right now. Oh my God. He flips through it as we go from region to region.
Oh my God.
And he has all these sketches, like he'll flip around. All the stuff is pre-done. Like, he's prepped this incredible, he's the classic GM trope of he's filled a literal book, composition books, this journal, other journals, with all the details of this literal world, and we experience it.
I'm so jealous of that. So deeply jealous. I've always wanted to, and I don't think I ever will, to go back and run a game complete, like a campaign completely analog. I think I'm just too integrated in how useful I find Google Docs and random tables online and name generators and all these other wonderful tools that make games easier for people and more accessible. But part of me is just so jealous of that ability to fill up a book. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my fantasy is always, if I ever won like those lotteries that are like $800 million or whatever, I would want to start a digital and physical museum of people's tabletop RPG prep stuff. I want to collect and scan notebooks of people's games and lore from the 80s and 90s. Like, wouldn't that be fascinating to be able to just, like, I don't know how you'd ever organize it or anything like that, but, like, you know, you click on this guy and you find out that Jimbo's from Wisconsin. He ran AD&D from 1992 to 1995 with these players. Here's his prep notes. And you can just flip through them like a PDF. Like, I want to look at Martin's journal. I want to see what's in there. It sounds like just such a, like a rich, like, cultural document almost. And a lot of that stuff, you know, like, it's sad, but I don't think Martin's like this, but people get out of the hobby. They throw that stuff away. It gets given away to people who don't really know what to do with it. Like, I just think about the years of lore that disappears every day, you know, with that kind of thing.
Yeah. All the imagination, all the things that you've thought that are in your head that you remember. And then, to quote Roy Batty from Blade Runner, all those moments will be lost in time, like teardrops in the rain.
Yeah, and I think maybe my anxiety with this that I'm coming to terms with now is that RPGs are an ephemeral media, right? Like, his notes in his journal aren't the game. The game is what happens around a table with you guys, and it's never recorded, and it's ill-remembered, and there's only three of you. Like, me and you talking about it on this podcast is probably the most that we can do for posterity to preserve it, you know? Like, I don't know. I have a hard time coming to terms with, like, how such great experiences can just be so, you know, a blip in time and then they're gone.
I feel really privileged. This is going to sound weird and societal, but bear with me. I deal with young people at work. I say deal with, like, that sounds bad. The three people who report to me happen to be significantly younger than me. So they're, like, buying houses right now in this market, which is insane. Mm-hmm. And because of how old I am, I happen to buy at the bottom of the last housing crash. So, like, I'm really good as far as house. So with these young people, I feel like there's this hustle culture. Yep. And this need to have hobbies where your hobbies make money. This need to, like, turn your TikTok not into your fun creative outlet, but into a brand. And I feel really divorced from that. And I know Martin's from an even earlier generation. Martin is quite a bit older than me. Martin's, you know, well into his 50s. And he's from a generation where you could afford, thanks to how well jobs paid and how low prices were, to have a hobby that generated no money whatsoever, that was simply your creative hobby. And that's the way he preps games. His hobby is prepping games, whether we play them or not.
Yeah. That's awesome. And yeah, I mean, like, think of how many people start or play RPGs for it to be a hustle, you know, like, me and you put out this podcast, but this podcast is for us, really for you, you know, like, to kind of digest our thoughts. And if other people enjoy it, that's great. But, like, this isn't why we play games, right? This podcast, we play games because they're fun, and we would do that if we weren't hustling about it. You know what I mean? So I respect it, though. That's awesome. To get away from the ephemeral nature of art and human experience and the housing market or whatever the hell we've been talking about this episode, I want to ask you two questions. Number one, what could you or I learn from the way that Martin runs games for you guys? Like, what is a lesson that we could learn from the way that he does things?
What he does is so different from what we do that it's hard to take lessons. It's like a sculptor taking lessons from a painter. It's possible, but it's hard. And here's what I would say. Taking a published adventure as a seed. So let me describe what he did in Palace of Silver Princess very briefly. And yeah, this is what we could take away from Martin's game. In Palace of Silver Princess, if you've never played it or read it, by the way, I've never read it because it's so entrenched in his world that I refuse to read it until, like, we're done with this campaign. But my understanding is it's an adventure that was one of the first adventures, I think, written by a woman.
It was, like, banned for a while, wasn't it?
It was pulled off the market and then rewritten because, okay, not because of what she wrote, but because of some of the illustrations.
Gotcha. Okay.
But it was also rewritten due to some perceived quality issues, even though Wizards ultimately did release the PDF of what she wrote. It was one of the first adventures written by a woman. In it, you are dealing with these people that are frozen as statues in this castle, and the monarch of the castle is Princess Argenta, who is the Silver Princess. She has silver hair. She wears silver clothes. Like, she's the Silver Princess. That's the adventure, okay? In Martin's game, as we continue to campaign in Haven, we freed Princess Argentia's sister, Aurelia, the golden princess. Aurelia, Aurelia, who has golden hair and wears like gold brocade cloth, but is a twin to Argentia in every possible way. Martin took this idea of Argentia and then gave her a long lost sister and then made their origin really intrinsic to the origin of the world. Like taking an adventure, Tanner, taking a thing from an adventure that fascinates you, and then expanding on it, expanding on it, expanding on it to build your world is, I think, what we could learn from Martin.
That's awesome. Yeah. The idea that like you can start from one place and, you know, just spin off and create a whole world is always something I've been jealous of. So I was looking up the author of Palace of the Silver Princess. It was by Tom Moldvay and Jean Wells. Yeah. She unfortunately passed away in 2012. She was pretty young, but I'm looking at her work here, and it looks like she worked for TSR and edited a couple adventures and then wrote Palace of the Silver Princess when she was 26 years old and then never wrote anything again. That's awesome. I'm always fascinated by these people. Like now that I'm, like you said, in my 30s, like all the stuff that people have accomplished in their 20s, I think that's part of being in your 30s is being like, oh, the Beatles all broke up by the time they were 30, like everything they were, you know. And it's awesome that RPG writers can have this effect on a game that is being run a decade after she died, almost 40 years after the adventure came out, and look at this experience you guys are having because of her work, you know?
Yeah.
That's profoundly cool to me.
Writing things and putting them out in the world. Cool. That's the truest form of immortality.
Just to wrap up here quick, one last question. I don't think that you should ever talk to Martin about this, but is there a version of his game that would be improved by the way that you or I run games, or is he just beyond that for what he is running?
No, I think there are things that he could improve at for sure. I wouldn't put him on that high of a pedestal. I would say I'd be very, very careful. The worst thing about Martin's game is our ability to make poor choices. But if you take that away and he starts Disneyfying the world so that we're always in the midst of an adventure that we can always win, that takes away what's special about his game. So I wouldn't give him any advice that touches that. What advice would I give him? Man, I don't know. He's achieving such a delicate balance that I couldn't achieve.
Yeah, I know. I think it's a valid answer if you can't think of one. You know, like the fact is, it sounds like he's a great cook. And if you're like, oh, when Tanner cooks for me, he always uses paprika, so you should put paprika on this gorgeous steak that you've made for me. You know, like that, I think it's fair to be like that. Nothing that we do would improve his games, you know?
I think that's the case. I don't think he's perfect. I just think don't take away, audience, that, oh, Dusty's afraid to criticize Martin or it puts Martin on this huge pedestal. I don't. It's just so different from what I do. It's like a painter giving a sculptor advice. I think the sculptor can learn from the painter, but I think the painter should be very cautious before they give that sculptor advice.
Yep. I think that's a very good way to put it. Anything else you want to talk about before we get to lessons learned?
I don't think so. I love being part of Martin's game. It's very special. I'll always remember, to your point, poorly, because it's fallible human memory, but there have been these magical moments in Martin's game. So when I see these videos about what's the right way to run RPGs, do you run a campaign or do you run one shots? I mean, I deeply enjoy both. So if you've never tried a campaign that just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes, it's worth a shot.
I also love the idea that, from what it sounds like, Martin, I've never met him, I don't want to stereotype him, but he's an older guy. He does all of his stuff analog. I love the idea that there are people out there giving advice on how to run the best game. And it sounds like this guy is already doing it and he doesn't watch those videos. Yeah. and he's just not part of that ecosystem at all. So lesson learned number one, learn lessons from other GMs. That's what I've been doing this whole session, just talking to you, Dusty, interviewing you about his game. I've been trying to soak in as much of that. I think I've been just mostly getting jealous about it, but I want to listen to this one again and like really think about ways I can improve my game from what it sounds like he does.
I want to do this again with one of your games.
Oh, interesting.
I want to interview about. I want to interview you about a game that you've really enjoyed, a session, okay. a campaign, something. So, think about what I can interview about, and let me know when you're ready, and then we'll just start cold. I'll be like, all right, like you know, what system? What's the basics? What's the? And then we'll go from there, and I'll just ask you questions. But I want you to share something like this too.
Cool.
All right. So next lesson learned: start with your first session and build your campaign outward from there. That is what he does. He does do a lot of journaling in between sessions, often driven by the things that we're fascinated with or the things that we do or the areas that we go. But then he'll also detail an area that we'll never go to. So when we talk about how sad it is to prep something and then throw it away, he does that all the time. But he is open about that. He talks about that, and he openly talks about his hobby being the prep. And gaming is just the icing on the cake. But yeah, don't be afraid to... None of this world of Haven that he built around Haven existed before Bernard and I finished our two sessions of Palace of the Silver Princess. And then Martin just decided that he wanted us to stay there and built this whole world. So start and build and have fun with building.
Yeah. Prep is its own type of fun. I think we've talked about that a little bit, that RPGs involve social fun and lonely fun, right? And it sounds like Martin is just excellent at keeping himself amused with that. I'm really jealous. I hope, dear listener, that you find your Martin someday and you get the best game of your life, because that's what it sounds like this is.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
People call them reviews, postmortems, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.